Then one day, when I was working on my master's, I happened to attend this conference on autoerotic asphyxiation. Now, you may be wondering what autoerotic asphyxiation has to do with the internet. So I'm sitting there, and I'm listening, and they have these clinical psychologists who are talking about autoerotic asphyxiation, and they're going, these are the type of people who practice it. We've gone, we've conducted interviews with them. We've collected this data from surveys and personality tests. And then there was this master's student who got up there and was presenting her findings. She had conducted her research through the internet, going into various areas and boards where these people, or supposedly these people were. And what she was presenting was, in some respects, opposite of what these experts were presenting. And, of course, her study wasn't very good, I thought, but it got me thinking at that point in time. It's like of one of two possibilities of why her research was completely and totally different from the others. And the thing that one thing that came to mind is, well, maybe in the face-to-face interaction, in the face-to-face interview, the subjects weren't being entirely truthful. The second possibility that occurred to me is that she was going into to various websites where that were based off autoerotic asphyxiation and talking to the members there. And the other possibility was, well, maybe these people just really don't practice it and they say they're practicing it. And so I, as luck would have it, it was time for me to start working on a master's thesis. So I said, I want to explore this issue. I want to check out this thing that I found out later to be called disinhibition. And I went through, and like most graduate students, the project I originally picked was too big. I realized that there was no way I was ever going to get that one done. So I decided to tone it back, and I just wanted to look at personality factors that were associated with internet use. And like everybody else who's looked at this issue, I said, it's got to be, you know, introversion. Introversion, that's what it is. Introverted people use the internet. Now, introverts, the other side is extroversion. Essentially, and very basically, an extrovert is somebody who's very outgoing in a social situation. They're the social butterflies. An introvert is the wallflower. They're the shy person. And so what I thought, and what a lot of people thought, is that it was the introverts using the internet. They weren't interacting with people in the real world, so they were doing it online. So starting with that premise, that's what I went and did and started looking at what other research has been done, and there's not been a whole lot of research in this area. The very first study I found was this one called Internet Paradox. And you might have actually heard of this study because it actually made it to the popular media because of what it had to say. What it had to say was not a good thing. Their conclusion was that using the internet led to being depressed. I didn't like the results of this study. I don't think it was a very good study. But that's that boring methodology stuff. That has to deal with the statistics that they used, the instruments that they used to measure depression and other things. One of the things that they used this personality questionnaire, and the whole reason why I bring up this study is because one of the things that they found was that in a pilot study that extroverts didn't use the internet as much as introverts. And pretty much that was the one sentence that I used from that study, because it really was the only thing that related to what I was interested in. My personal belief is that using the internet does not lead to depression. It's depression leads to using the internet. But this one was really irritating. It made it into, I think, even as far as TV Guide, there was a couple of paragraphs in it about there. And like I said, there was other people who were very unhappy with this. One person said that their instrument that they used to measure depression really basically kind of measures just social unease, not depression. Their extroversion questionnaire, I was considering using that one for my own research. However, there was one question on there that pretty much made it to where I would not want to use this test. And it was free, which is probably the reason why they use it. And they had a lot of funding. I don't even know why they use this questionnaire. One of the last questions on the questionnaire was, I can let myself go and have a hilarious time at a gay party. Which this test was done in 1962. In 1962, you know, having a good time at a gay party was not quite the same thing as having a good time at a gay party now. And I've talked to people about this, and they said, well, you know, they can just change the wording on that one question, and it won't be a problem. I said, no, it might be a problem. Anytime you change the wording on a test, you need to do a validity study to make sure you're still measuring what you were to begin with. So basically, just take away that the questionnaire that they used to measure extroversion on that was outdated, to say the least. But that was the start of my research into this. And then I went and I had to dig more. I only had a few articles. This was probably the only one I had talking about extroversion and internet use. And I went and to my professor at the time, said, here's what I have. And he goes, okay, either find more and write this up, make this better, or pick a new topic. I said, well, I'm going to make this better. Then I happened to discover this article by Buchanan and Smith, and they were talking about personality testing over the World Wide Web. Now, since there's so limited research in this area, I had to be kind of creative for my thesis and how things tied in. But one of the interesting things about this is they were trying to see if you could give a personality test on the internet and have the results being valid and reliable. So they took this test and they made an online version of it, and they also had a paper and pencil version, and they gave it the paper and pencil version to students at the university that they were at. And then they went into news groups and said, hey, could you guys come and take this test, this online test? And so they had another group who took the online version. What they found, though, was that they found that you could give the tests reliably over the internet, which is a good thing. But they found no significant differences between the group that took the test in the classroom, the paper and pencil version, and the test that people from the news groups took. Now, this becomes important because one of the personality factors that they measured on the test was extroversion. So here we have a study that was published 1 year after the first one, and they say that no differences exist. Which is kind of good for me as wanting to write this, because now I can say, hey, they say it exists. They say it doesn't. Unresolved issue. That's the reason why we need to do this. It makes justification for doing the research that much easier. Then there was this, also came across a internet addiction website with some studies on there. This was a study conducted by Young and Rogers, and this was a much earlier study. And what they found were that people who were addicted to the internet tested high on primary factors on their personality test that load on extroversion. So here we have a little bit more controversy into the mix, which is great for a researcher. Got to have that controversy, because if you don't have the controversy, then there's not always the best justification to do the research. Actually, one of the best justifications to do the research is because nobody else has done it, but when you're writing the paper, you have to build it up in some way. And so those were the three studies I was basically working off of. Needless to say, my thesis was a lot shorter than other people's, because when people ask me how long my introduction was in my thesis, I said 12 pages. And they're like, that's it? And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, mine's 30. How do you get away with writing 12? And I said, well, I only have three studies. And the only reason why it was 12 pages long is because I spent about 4 pages describing what the internet was. And some people have gone through and looked at this, try to do try to describe internet users based off demographics. This is, in my opinion, is kind of a dead issue. Like, one website reported that the internet users were about 50-50, 50% male, 50% female. Another internet site reported that it was about 70-30, 70% male, 30% female. there's not a whole lot of agreement. When I did my research, I ended up with 80% female, 20% male. So, what does that mean? And I'll mention that later. One thing to keep in mind, if you're a guy looking for a date, psychology department down in Milledgeville is probably not such a bad place to start. So this brings us to my first study. And like I said, like the others, I was enamored with this idea that it was extroversion. It had to be extroversion. It was because extroversion was the measure of sociability. That's why these people were using the internet, because they weren't being very social in the real world. I did the study, and I used correlation, and I went and I asked, I gave them a survey, and I said, okay, how often do you use the internet? Give me a number in hours. And they did that, and I said, okay. Also, how often do you go into chat rooms and news groups and use your email and so forth? I also asked them about how they thought their computer skills were. I said, well, rate, you know, just one question, rate yourself. Are you an expert at using a computer? Can you barely use the computer? So forth. And then I had all these groups, and I went and I punched them into the spread, into the database, and ran the study. And what had come out after, out of the 30 pages of printout I had were a couple of things. And extroversion really never came up. Well, introversion, it had absolutely, there was no relationship between introversion and internet use. The only thing that really came up, and it was across all groups, really was there was a factor called liveliness, which was actually described as almost a childlike quality, and it's more or less how much energy you put into your conversations. And here's where it gets odd. People who scored high on this liveliness factor spent more time on the internet. And so I looked at this and I said, well, that's kind of odd, as I'm sure most of you are sitting there thinking. But what I realized was when I looked at this data is that it was largely the females, and since 80% of my sample was female, that carried through the other groups. So I'm fairly confident that this was just an effect of having so many females in the sample. And then later I had to do a research topic in a multivariate statistics class. Let me tell you, multivariate statistics, oh, they're that much worse than normal statistics. Suffered in that class. I was also taking normal statistics at the same time, so I was really suffering that semester. And so we had to do this project in the multivariate class. We had to use a database, and we had to apply multivariate statistics to them. Well, the only database I had was this was from my master's thesis research. And I actually had a fairly sizable database. I have all these personality factors for 162 people. So it's not a small database in any way. But so I ran multivariate statistics. I did multiple regression, multivariate multiple regression. It's not really a fun thing, but what regression allows you to do is it allows you to try to predict things. And so what I did at first is I stuck in all these, well, what's called global personality factors. The global personality factors that I had collected were extroversion, anxiety, self-control, independence, and tough-mindedness. I put them in, I ran these statistics, and I found nothing. I said, well, that's kind of what I was expecting to find, nothing. And then I went and I did a little presentation on it for class, and then I had to write a paper. And so I went back and I started just out of curiosity, I started playing around with the statistics a little bit. I put in a couple of groups, and what I found out was that anxiety became a good predictor of internet use when you controlled for their perceived computer ability. Now, this shocked me. Sitting there going, anxiety? What the hell does anxiety have to do with using the internet? So I pulled out the testing manual, and I read up on what their anxiety was. And basically what they said is that anxiety can be aroused in response to external or internal events, big shock. and that the low anxious people tend to be unperturbed, and that high anxious people experience, well, let's see, negative affect and may have difficulty controlling their emotions or reactions and may act in counterproductive ways. So I started thinking, high anxious people may be acting in counterproductive ways, and I read on, and then it said, this may be related to social desirability. I was like, wait a second, this is turning out to be more of a social thing than I thought. And then there was another sentence in there that just really kind of said, made me go, wow, which was, it said that anxious people tend to make poor social impression and may appear to lack confidence or assertive ambition. And then suddenly things started to make sense. Anxious people were using the internet because they had difficulty interacting in social situations. Unlike extroverts or introverts who just don't like interacting that much with other people, here are people who kind of want to interact with others, but they're just not very good at it. They get really anxious and nervous and make bad impressions, and they were the ones who were kind of using the internet. But once again, keep in mind this was a sample of 80% female, so if, like I said, looking for a date, go down to Milledgeville Psychology Department, good place to look for it. But so that really got me thinking. I said, well, what's this anxiety thing have to do with internet use? I mean, what? How can I possibly explain this? And here's where we make the transition into some of the psychological factors that may help explain internet use. I took the social psychology class at one point in time, and we spent a chapter talking about what the self was and how you define the self and so forth. And one of the theories that was presented in that chapter was that the self is more or less composed of three. There's three components. When you talk about the self, there's three things. There's the person's body, because your body will tell a lot about who you are, what you're interested in. I mean, the obvious one is, are they interested in exercise or not? You know, do they eat all the time at fast food restaurants, or do they try to go to the go and eat healthy? Do they get a salad every once in a while? Also, it's composed of your social identity. How you look, how you dress, these all play a part of who you are. Now, and you can look at these you can look at people, and based off how they're dressed, you can kind of guess what they, not necessarily what they do, but what their lifestyle is like, what their interests are. Like, I can look around here and I see a lot of people wearing science fiction badges, so I can just guess that you all like science fiction. And then also that there was this mind component, and that who you are made drastic, affected how you made decisions. And so basically there was the body, there was your social identity, and then there was your mind. And I thought about this. Well, when people are on the internet, what's there? You have their mind. I can't see your body if I'm talking to you online. I don't really know anything about your social, who you identify with socially. I can't tell that. And so I think one theory is that the reason why these people, these anxious people can communicate online, or anybody can communicate online, and why they may act differently online than how they act face-to-face, is that their self is no longer really all there, because it's just their mind. That's all that's left of them when you're talking to them on the internet. And then, actually, I have the article right here. As I was thinking, well, that's a pretty good description. Got this magazine, and there was an article in there about the psychology of evil. I said, well, that's kind of interesting, so I went through and I started reading it, and kind of had this realization. I said, wow, some of this stuff, it can be tied into internet use. And let me actually talk about one of the studies that was done. It was done by this guy named Philip Zimbardo. It was this rather kind of controversial study. It was called the Stanford Prison Experiment. What this guy did is he took a large group of ordinary college students who had signed up for this experiment and randomly assigned them into two subgroups, prisoners and guards. And he went and he put them in a prison. And the guards, he put all them in uniforms, he put the prisoner, they had their prisoner uniforms and the prisoner numbers. And this study was supposed to last 2 weeks. It lasted 6 days before they pulled the plug because it was that bad. What had happened was is that the guards were literally torturing the prisoners. Normal college students on both groups, the guards were like, they were doing some really nasty stuff to these people. And so this Zimbardo guy, he said, okay, what the hell happened here? And he said that, okay, let's see. Well, first off, the guards were, I took away their individuality. I made them somewhat anonymous. They were all wearing uniforms. They had sunglasses on. They were wearing hats. So it was really hard to distinguish between one person and another. The prisoners, they had been dehumanized. They were no longer people. They were referred to by their numbers. So you weren't Bob. You were prisoner, 56421. And then they also said, well, I put them in this strange new environment. And so you may, maybe you might start to see the connection here between what this prison study had to do with internet use. And also I think that this might go a long way to explain hacking as well and cyber crimes and things along those lines, is that on the internet your individuality is removed. Sure, I may not be running around in a uniform with sunglasses, beating up people, but I am going by a nick, a handle, whatever you want to call it, if I'm in a chat room. I'm not up there. I don't have my real name up there. So I'm anonymous. And the people I'm talking to, the people I'm interacting with, or if you're a hacker, or if you want to talk about flaming, the person there, it's not a person. It's another handle or a nick. So I'm anonymous, and that's just words on the screen. That's all it is. If you want to talk about hacking, hackers, or at least the bad ones, they do damage. Best case scenario, you lose some time. Worst case scenario, there's financial repercussions. But these are normal people, and they're anonymous, and these are things that they're hurting. Even though they're hurting people, they're not people. They're things, really. And that's kind of a bad way to look at internet use. Now, there was this other person who was, she goes by, her last name, her name is Sherry Turkle. She wrote this chapter in this book called Playing in the Muds. And she said that MUDs were pretty much identity workshops, and that what these things led you to do were to try out new identities. So this is the positive side of what's taking place, of being anonymous. So you can try out new identities. Maybe you're not really happy in life, so you go and you kind of tweak your personality a little bit. Maybe you decide to become a little bit more outgoing. Maybe you try to stand up for more things that are just causes on the internet than you would in real life. What she said is that the self becomes decentered and multiplied. Sometimes exponentially. The internet would, in her opinion, is a good thing. So here we have, it's the same mechanisms in place being anonymous is in place, and it can allow you to do these really great and wonderful things. It can also allow you to do some really evil things. Let's see. That's about all that I have to say on the personality side. Now I have mentioned that there's one final topic I wanted to talk about, and that is of fantasy. And this mostly has to do with internet IRC, or chat rooms, as I like to call them, because I don't like to sound too terribly technical. I'm in psychology, not computer, so I don't have to speak in, three letters. But one of the things that psychologists have known for a long time now is that your mind likes to fill in blanks. And I was actually kind of happy to see this. I saw Dr. Drew Pinsky, Love Lines, Love Phones. I can't remember which one he does, but he was talking about this on his website. And I was going, hey, this is cool. Somebody else is talking about that. It's just not just me telling people. It's now some other authority who can reach a lot more people than I can, which is a good thing because he was right on. Now, fantasy comes in that when you meet people, you build this fantasy about it. You have very incomplete information. Maybe you might start getting pictures of what this person looks like in your mind. Their build, how they act, what they is. I mean, you can kind of get an understanding of who a person is by talking to them through a chat room, but remember that's with them being somewhat anonymous, that they may be tweaking different aspects of their self. And so if you go and actually meet them face to face, you may not, it may not be the same person that you thought you were talking to. And it's kind of dangerous in a way. Somebody asked me once if I ever wanted to meet anybody I was talking to online. I said, no, I don't. And they said, why? I said, well, because of this fantasy component. I can't know everything about you that I'd know if I met you by talking to you anywhere else, because there's other things I'm going to pick up, your body language, what you look like. And these are going to be things that I'm going to pick up better. And I can also look at your actions and your behaviors. I mean, you can tell me all day online that, you know, you're a good, honest person, but are you? I don't know. And so that I've done it. And I've engaged in this sort of behavior rather frequently. You know, I built a fantasy in my head of what this person looked like, what their values were, their beliefs were. And I knew that if I met this person face-to-face and actually talked to them, that there was a good chance of this fantasy not being correct. And so it's kind of, which wouldn't be a good thing because, I'd be walking into a situation expecting one person, find out that the person I was expecting, that just wasn't them. And so that's just kind of a little, keep that in mind. If you do, I mean, not arguing against meeting people online. In fact, I think it's a wonderful way to meet people. And actually meeting them face-to-face, it's a good thing. But just keep that in mind. Remember this whole fantasy component. Or at least I like to call it fantasy. And it gets kind of really amusing if you're talking to somebody and you bring up fantasy immediately. Particularly in chat rooms, immediately, as soon as you bring up fantasy, they're thinking you're talking about sex. But no, in this case, fantasy is just the fact that we fill in the gaps. We take what little we know and we make a person out of it, and sometimes that person just isn't the same of what we actually expect. That's really about all that I have for you today. Are there any questions?
Of conversation is?
It's okay. I guess let me come to it from this angle. The test I used was the 16PF, originally done about 50 years ago, and it's currently in its fourth edition. What they added in their fourth edition is they put in this distinction between primary factors and global factors. Extroversion is the global factor, and liveliness, as well as there were four others whose names I can't recall at this time because they were nothing showed up with them. But anyways, there's not a whole lot of description on this liveliness factor, but pretty much it's just energy, and I put in a conversation. If I sit here just kind of talking to you and not kind of dead, that's going to be low liveliness. But if I'm real happy and perky and like bouncing around and I'm like moving, and that's going to be high liveliness.
And mental liveliness.
Yeah, it's basically more of how you behave. It has really nothing to do with the mind. Any other questions?
Hi. Pat, part of what you're saying about fantasy is that when people meet, you know, you extrapolate the other person's personality right. based on your own and your own desires and so on. One of the things I've noticed is that people who have successful online romances are very careful to meet very quickly, whereas mm-hmm. the longer the period between the online meeting and the real life meeting, the greater the chance that the romance fails. Do you agree with that? What do you have to say about online romances?
Well, from what it sounds like, now keep in mind, you know, there's very little research talking about personality factors and how people, real research. There's a lot of case studies and things like that, but there's not, there's no experiments, let me put it that way. So I really can't answer this question from, you know, saying this study said this, or this is just me kind of shooting from the hip based off my own personal experience and also taking some psychology classes, is that maybe what's happening there is with the shorter time period, the fantasy maybe not be that big. If I'm talking for somebody for several months every day online, that fantasy is probably going to get out of control. But if I talk to him for a couple of days, say, hey, this person sounds kind of interesting, let's meet, I don't think the fantasy is going to be very well developed. And so it's I see in that situation it's going to be less likely to be a problem, and therefore the relationship, whether it being a romantic relationship or a friend relationship, it won't affect it that much then. It's, basically, as I see it, the longer you talk to somebody, the more you think you know about them. And that's why I think it's the time there. Just the fantasies don't get that detailed. Does that answer your question? Or? Okay. Any others? Come on, let's make him run. I see him running around here, and I'm kind of reminded of the Donahue show, Phil Donahue, running around through the audience. But I saw that yesterday, and I knew I had to say it. Any other questions? Well, if there's no other questions, I must say you all have been... Oh, what? Question? Yes, make him run.
If you had to summarize all of your research to this point, to maybe put in a sentence or two what your thesis has shown to you, what would you say?
It's actually kind of a difficult question to answer because there's like the research I did, and then there's the things I'm the conclusions I drawing from it based off other readings. Let's see, condensing all this and down into one or two sound bites. Being anonymous causes people to act in ways different than what they normally act in. And that's what happens on the internet, allowing people who may have problems interacting socially to express themselves. They find their voice. I guess that would be probably about the best way I can condense it down to about two sentences. Ah, good. Make them run.
You said that the high degree of liveliness you noticed in your group mm-hmm. was due to the large number of women. So are you saying that women in general are more lively, or that lively women tend to use the internet? And if so, what about men?
You see, the thing is since I'm not going to discount and say that this liveliness factor plays no part. But it was present. One of the groups I did was male versus female, and the liveliness factor was present in the females and not the males. I do not know enough about the research on liveliness with this particular test to really comment much about it, but I do know this. I do know that one of your options for scoring this test is you can use, they have broken up, you can say, okay, I want this scored based off sex. So they score it, or they can score it differently for males than females. So it is possible that maybe liveliness is just something that is that females tend to be higher on than males. It also could be that this females who use the internet have this quality. It's really hard to say. Like I said, I'm not a personality researcher, so I don't know that area very well. And I was just pleased to find anything at that point in time. Good, gotta get in and run.
This is a slightly different piece of using the internet, but did you look into anything about online journaling? People putting their lives out there.
You see, that's actually been somewhat of a curiosity to me. Although I've only recently become aware in the last few months about that online journaling thing. What I'm curious about, though, or my curiosity about people putting their lives out in there were, to put them, I guess to put it generically, the cam people. And I'm not talking about the ones who are doing some sort of sex, where it's sex-based. I'm talking about people who just set a camera in their room and just do their daily activities and people watch them. I'm curious why they want to do this. I don't know if it's because they are just more, if they're exhibitionist or if they think that nobody's really watching or what the case is. And I would really like to study that. Problem is, at universities, particularly if you're a graduate student, is you don't really have a whole lot of control most of the time. I got rather lucky being where I was at that I got to choose my own topic for my master's thesis. Where I'm at now, I can't walk up to a professor and say, hey, I want to do a study on cam girls. They'll look at me and they'll just say, are you serious? Because the way it works in the university is professors really don't want to do research that's not going to get them published. They really only want to do research in the areas they've been working on. So I experienced this a couple of times where up in Raleigh, gone to professors and said, hey, I want to do this study. And they said, that's not really my area. Go and talk to so-and-so. Go and talk to them. I want to do this study. Not quite my area, but what's in it for me? Well, I want to see this. And they're like going, well, if you can work out so it looks like we can get a publication out of it or a presentation, something I can put on my resume, then I'll think about it. And there's not a lot of people. Industrial organizational vocational psychology is psychology of the workplace. So I am interested in things such as personality testing online. That's kind of how this was kind of how I got into it, interested in whether or not you can test people online.
I said, I assume you've gone to E-mode then.
Not yet. There's actually, it's kind of funny because there's a lot of people doing personality or testing online, but there's very little in the academic press about it. So there's still this big question of whether or not the results are valid. But there's a lot of studies I'd like to do. And also I think studies of this nature, like I ask people how many hours they spend online is one of the questions I ask them. I don't think I can ask those questions anymore. I don't think I can ask them because of broadband. If you ask me how many hours I spend online, pretty much as long as I'm awake, my computer's on, and I've always got ICQ or Yahoo Messenger running in the background, so there's always the potential there for social interaction, or for using the internet. So if you ask me how many hours I was going to be online, I'm online, I'd have to tell you 16. I'm actually doing things on there for 16 hours, but so that is really going to change the way in which this type of research has been done. Will be done in the future. Hopefully there'll be more stuff popping up. There does seem to be more people interested in this topic. Oh, you didn't make him run very far.
What you just said about control, I don't know if this is a question or just an ego statement, but one of the things that I notice that I like about internet usage is that I have complete control over when I can talk to somebody and when I can't. and I can end the conversation at any time without being rude.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can talk for 5 minutes, or I can talk for a half an hour, and I can talk to one person, or I can talk to 20. And so I have complete control over when I have this interaction with people, something that I don't have in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, really good aspects to the Internet. I mean, first off, there's the control. I mean, I like going into chat rooms, and I like talking to people from other countries. I also like going into chat rooms and talking to people from North Carolina. Yeah. But, yeah, my opinion, Internet chat, good things. But, and my buddy John's opinion over there, they're scary things because of these security concerns. But if you were here for his talk yesterday, then you know that. But had to pick on him a little bit. Any other questions? All right. If there's no other questions, then you all have been a lovely audience, and thanks for having me. Don't forget to tip your waitress.